Hi, this is Zach W., and you are listening to the Daily Reflection Podcast. And I think that for me, in that step five is that place where I read my inventory. I let you know exactly what I've done, what I'm ashamed of, what I fear. And the other person is able to take that in and not judge me for it, not go running the other direction, but rather to say, yes, this is who you are and who you can become through these steps is so much bigger and beautiful and much more yourself than just these things on a list.
Welcome to the Daily Reflection Podcast. My name is Michael Lynn, from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
And I'm Lee McGinnis from Leesburg, Virginia.
As members of the recovery community, we created this podcast as a way to provide experience, strength, and hope through the lens of the Daily Reflection book. Each day, we interview members of the recovery community in the hope that their experience may provide inspiration.
We value inclusion and diversity, and we really want to provide a platform for all the voices of recovery. We aren't affiliated with any 12-step or recovery program, but you may hear these mentioned throughout the course of an interview.
Hey, before we get to the show, I'd like to ask a favor. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, it'd be great if you could leave us a comment or a rating. This is going to do a couple of things. It's going to help us expand our reach and improve the show.
We hope you enjoyed this episode.
Thanks so much to Jeff Baim of Frederick, Maryland for editing services and helping us get these episodes out the door. Hi, Lee. Who do we have in the studio today?
Today is May 8th. And we have Zach W. from Chicago, Illinois, here with us today. And he is going to share with us on today's Daily Reflection, which is a resting place.
Fantastic. Well, Zach, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on the podcast.
I'm really glad to be here.
Fantastic. Well, we get started in the same way every day, Zach. We ask the guests to read the Daily Reflection for the day. Would you help us get started?
Sure. This is the Daily Reflection for May 8th, a resting place. All of AA's 12 steps ask us to go contrary to our natural desires. They all deflate our egos. When it comes to ego deflation, few steps are harder to take than five, but scarcely any step is more necessary to long-time sobriety and peace of mind than this one. That's from the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, page 55. After writing down my character defects, I was unwilling to talk about them and decided it was time to stop carrying this burden alone. I needed to confess those defects to someone else. I had read and had been told I could not stay sober unless I did. Step five provided me with a feeling of belonging, with humility and serenity when I practiced it in my daily living. It was important to admit my defects of character in the order presented in step five. To God, to ourselves, and to another human being. Admitting to God first paved the way for admission to myself and to another person. As taking this step is described, a feeling of being at one with God and my fellow man brought me to a resting place where I could prepare myself for the remaining steps toward a full and meaningful sobriety.
Thank you for reading, Zach. Before we get started, what is your sobriety date?
My sobriety date is March 29th of 2015.
Excellent. As you read this, what comes to mind for you first?
You know, I'm thinking a lot as I read through this reading and try to internalize it about what step five was like for me. Step five provided me with a feeling of belonging, with humility and serenity when I practice it in my daily living. I think that's a crucial point. When I was drinking, I didn't belong anywhere. I certainly didn't feel like I belonged anywhere. And I think that if there's one thing that sobriety through my program has provided me, it's been a sense that anywhere I go, there are people that I belong to. There are spaces all around Chicago where I belong and where I'm needed or where I'm invited at least. And more than anything, that my life isn't just mine. It can be, it always can be bigger than just what I'm experiencing. It's also about what I have to offer someone else, what I receive from other people. Step five, I believe, is the place where that sense of belonging truly, where the rubber hits the road. You know, so for me at least, step five is this process of telling someone exactly who you are. And that other person, a sponsor, whoever you're doing your step five with, is saying to you, tell me who you are and I'm not going anywhere. I can receive everything that you have to show me. You can be as free as you want to, essentially, you can be free to just really show yourself. You know, in my line of work, we talk about unconditional source of positive regard. The notion that someone is just listening to you and isn't judging you and is just trying to know you. And I think that for me in that step five is that place where I read my inventory. I let you know exactly what I've done, what I'm ashamed of, what I fear. And the other person is able to take that in and not judge me for it, not go running the other direction, but rather to say, yes, this is who you are and who you can become through these steps is so much bigger and beautiful and much more yourself than just these things on a list. I don't know if that makes much sense, but that's what I get from the thing.
It makes perfect sense. I love it. I love the feeling of belonging that you get from doing that fifth step. And like you said, this unconditional positive regard. That's something that I've experienced with my sponsor. So I did my fifth step with someone who is still my sponsor today, and that's usually what happens. But I'm curious about how you found that person to help you do your fifth step, and is that your sponsor?
You know, I'm remembering pretty vividly the moment when I found my first sponsor. It was I've been lucky that I've experienced the benefits of this programming groups. I got sober in Vancouver, and then I moved to Philadelphia, and I was in Philadelphia for a few years. And then my work took me to Jerusalem, and I was in Jerusalem for a year. And then I came back to Philadelphia, and now I'm in Chicago. So along the way, I've had the opportunity. I've been really blessed to have great sponsors in all of those places. You know, I received my sponsor the first AA meeting I ever went to, and I was in this church basement in the Fellowship of the Spirit in Vancouver, and I was like deer in the headlights. And I went to my first meeting, and I heard people share about their experience, strength, and hope. And I thought to myself, in like the deepest part of my heart, like, I don't want to go. I don't want this meeting to ever end. Like, there's something here that I've been looking for, and I didn't even know it. And whatever my drinking was, I just can't go back there. I know that's going to kill me, but whatever's in this dingy church basement is where I belong. And I had this like heartbreaking moment where the meeting was ending. They were reading the last page 164. And I knew that like, I only had minutes left of that feeling. I only had minutes left of that feeling of belonging. So then, you know, when they turned the lights back on, this was a meeting with where they turned the lights off and had a spotlight. So they turned the lights back on and people started talking and milling about, and instantly like, I'm just alone. And I think many alcoholics know the feeling of being alone in a crowded room. And then suddenly some guy points to me in the crowd, and like it's the most direct point I've ever seen in my life, and just beckons me to come over. And he says, "Hi, my name is Alex, and you said that you were new. What's your name?" I said, "I'm Zach." He says, "Welcome." And he says, "You're probably hurting pretty bad right now." And I, such a weird question to feel so known. And I said, "Yeah." Again, that first moment of me showing someone in a true and honest way who I was. Yes, I'm Zach. I'm an alcoholic, but I am hurting. He takes a big book from the table. He writes his number in it. He underlines a few different passages. He says, "Read those passages and then call me at that number, and I'll take you to a meeting tomorrow if you want." You know, before I came into that meeting, I was alone and I was lost and I had no idea about myself. And, you know, after that hour and after leaving that meeting, that first meeting, I had a book, I had a name, I had a number, I had someone to connect with. And for me, I think that has been, like, that was the start of that sponsorly relationship. I'm grateful, you know, I'm so dearly grateful for that first experience. But sponsorship through the times, I've always found sponsors, and what I've looked for was someone whom I could give my trust to see the bigger picture that I can't see myself. You know, for me with sponsorship, it feels very important to find someone. And in my head, I say, can I trust this person? Can I give them, can they be a power greater than myself? And what I mean by that is a sense of like, do I trust this person to say to myself, I don't have all the data. here. I can't see the whole picture. My whole life, I just can't, I don't want to be responsible for like seeing the whole thing. I want someone else who has a little bit more time than me, a little bit more wisdom than me, to help me see me for the whole thing and let me know what I can't see about myself. Now, that for me can't be like this bully-some relationship. It can't be someone who's trying to like clock me all the time and say like, you're worthless, you can't see how much you suck or whatever. It has to be someone who I can trust and I actively like give that permission to. Someone I know has that unconditional positive regard, that notion of, you know, I'm going to know you, I'm going to see you, I'm going to care about you. And I'll be responsible for holding that. And so that when I call my sponsor, I'm asking them to kind of see about my life in a way that I can't see myself. What they give me back is precious. And I think that that starts in step 5. Can we sit down together? Can you see me? Can I tell you who I am? Mary Oliver, who's a poet, has this beautiful quote from a poem like Wild Geese. It says, tell me of your despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. The notion of being like that we share with each other very intimate details about what is like deeply tragic in our lives, but deeply ours. And in that exchange, we don't run from each other. We actually come closer together and form these intimate relationships where we can share wisdom and share power and experience strength and hope. I don't know. I'm really into sponsorship. And I think it starts with step 5. So
beautiful. That was moving. I think the sponsorship relationship is one of the most important relationships in our lives, really, next to maybe our spouses and our parents and our kids. I don't know. But I think it's important just to note here, I guess, that as a new person in sobriety, we have permission to change our mind. We have permission to say this relationship isn't working and maybe I need to explore a different one and maybe we get to vet. And I don't think we always know that when we're new. So I think you're shining light on an important piece, which is, you know, I'm not going to share honestly and openly with somebody I don't think sees me and loves me no matter what. Thanks for bringing that up. Did you have something you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, Leah, I appreciate that insight. I think that it's like, it's totally, I've known people, I had a friend of mine who called me and was in this kind of real dilemma thinking, is it time that I find a new sponsor? I've worked with this person for a few years now. We've gone through the steps. And is it time? And we were talking about it together. Like, I didn't necessarily know the answer to that question, but I said like, well, maybe you can say what you have to say about it. I can say what I have to say about it. And together we'll try to find some amount of wisdom to answer this question. And, you know, one thing that I've heard in the rooms a lot is like, find someone who has what you want. It's certainly been my experience that in my time of sobriety, what I want, I heard from actually an old sponsor of mine, his name is Israel. He's in Jerusalem. He said, you know, the things that I wanted, the quality and like the depth of the things that I wanted in sobriety has changed and grown in deeper and richer ways. So like, certainly in my case, like the things that I wanted when I first got sober were like, I don't know, provincial health insurance. I wanted to like not drink. You know, I wanted to have someone who could give me a bus pass. I don't know, these kinds of simple things and got more than the bus pass. And I left Canada before I could get the provincial health insurance, whatever. But the notion being that, you know, my first sponsor, at least I didn't get the bus pass from him, but he certainly gave me rides. Now, what he gave me was a lot deeper than that. But over time, you know, I came to a point where like, I need a sponsor. I happen to be Jewish. So, and it was very important. My religious identity is an important part. It's not important for everyone, but for me, it was important. So at some point I said to myself, God, it'd be really good to have a sponsor who was Jewish. Luckily for me, I moved to Jerusalem where there's a whole bunch of Jewish people. So in that moment that we were able to connect on this one level, and he was able to give me wisdom based off of that shared identity. But then later in my life, I needed a sponsor who had different things. My last sponsor said to me, Zach, you're now in a relationship, and this relationship is getting kind of serious. You probably want to find someone who's in a very serious relationship. And that person can be your sponsor once you move to Chicago, because that might be something that you want. And they're going to be the person who can see what you're doing and offer their wisdom to you. So like, I love the notion that some people stay with their sponsors their entire sobriety. I'm a big fan also of the option of, you know, what we want and where we have to grow changes as we get soberer and soberer in this program. So like, finding different people who can show you the path, like, isn't it great that we have this fellowship that has so many different, such a diversity of wisdoms that we can point each other in so many good directions.
Yeah. And the notion that there's so many different personalities and people. I've found AA to be all inclusive and welcoming, and you can certainly find people that you can connect with on a personal level, for sure. But up until now, we've been talking about the sponsorship relationship. And while that's massively important, especially through the fourth and fifth step, tell me a little about your relationship with a higher power, and maybe talk to us about the role that God plays in your recovery.
Certainly. You know, for me, that's got to change too. My home group, we're in this pandemic moment. And so I've moved recently to Chicago, but my home group is still in Philadelphia, and I'm part of a big book group. And we had just finished reading as a fellowship. We have just finished reading more on alcohol, more about alcoholism, and we're about to go into We Agnostics. And so every year we read through the big book about, you know, paragraph by paragraph, and we share on paragraphs. So we move through the whole 164 in about a year. So I find that, you know, when we get back to We Agnostics, which is for me a chapter that has a lot to say about higher powers, my relationship with mine and how I think about it is like different on a yearly basis. But I think where it starts has to do with connection. You know, I think a lot of people, certainly people on this podcast, have shared the wisdom that the opposite of addiction is connection. I'll say in my drinking, the thing that caused me the most suffering and was the alienation that I felt. I had to figure out everything alone. I had to survive by myself. I had to actually distance people in order to get closer to the drink. For me, coming from where I was in my own kind spiritual and religious development, this whole God thing, I wanted God very much far over there. And I wanted to be way over here. I'm gesturing right now. You can't see, but like, I wanted a lot of distance. I'll put it that way. I had this conception of God in my life, but I wanted that God way, way, way over there so that I could be seen, but that wouldn't meddle that much in my business. That wasn't sufficient for me getting sober. And I was not really that sold on the whole God concept, but certainly what I found in the rooms that felt, can I say holy? It felt divine. It felt something really meaningful to me was a sense of connection. That suddenly through these people and through these rooms, I didn't have to feel so alone all the time. And so for me, in the beginning of my sobriety, the rooms, the fellowship, that was very much my higher power. And over time, I would say, you know, what meditation, coming to believe, meant was slowly finding myself walking through my day, walking to and from meetings, and just like not feeling, even if I was the only one in the street or whatever, not feeling as alone and noticing that. And at some point deciding, maybe I want to give that feeling a name. Maybe I want to, like, when I reach out beyond myself, I want to give that some sort of address. And maybe I'll call that my higher power, whatever gets me out of myself. And so for me, coming from a religious tradition that does use the word God, I just put that in there. And I said, okay, well, whenever I try to reach out into something bigger than myself, maybe I'll just call that God. And I'll try to say, God, can you help me feel that way where I don't feel alone, please? Sure. Okay, great. And then when I felt that way, I was like, oh, okay, God, thank you for helping me feel that way. I feel better now, and I don't want to drink now. So that's kind of cool. And that's kind of where it started. Now, I'm someone in my life, I've studied a lot of theology and stuff like that as a part of my profession. However, it's still exactly that simple. And to some degree, exactly that doesn't have to be much more complicated, which is another way of saying it can be a lot deeper and not be able to be named. It's just kind of something that I feel inside. And I think that anyone, regardless of their own religion or non-religion or spirituality, just finding a way to connect to something outside of yourself. I want to say that that can be a life force that can help us stay sober.
I love what you're sharing. And I know you belong to a specific faith tradition. And what I hear you saying is really kind of different than dogma and a set of beliefs that a particular religion may ask of any of us, that, you know, regardless of the faith tradition we belong to. So I hear you saying something different when you're describing the God of your understanding or the higher power that you relate to.
Leah, I appreciate the question. You know, it's a thorny thing. Certainly, I'm Jewish, and there will be Jewish listeners to this podcast, and there will be people who are not Jewish at all. I don't know. There's one thing you could say about probably the program as well, but certainly about Jewish communities, which is that, you know, you have two Jews, you have three opinions. So I leave a lot of room for a whole bunch of people to think about this in a whole bunch of different ways. But Lee, you're certainly right. I come from, the way that I understand it, a religious tradition that very much is like very, very big on the rules and doing the certain things. Belief is a little bit more complicated. However, you know, certainly for me, there are two different forces in my life that really give my life shape and meaning. One of them is my Judaism, and the other one is the program. And then, of course, there's all the other kinds of things in life that give me meaning. But at different times in my sobriety, I've definitely had to keep those two things separate. My conceptions of a higher power, the way I work my program, and then what I do when I'm in synagogue or what I do when I'm studying the texts of my religious tradition, et cetera. Those things had to be very separate in order for me to feel truly like welcome and not counting myself out of the room. So by saying, okay, well, this isn't a church basement. Whatever happens in a church isn't meant for me. Or saying, you know, that this big book thing here is very much a Christian text, and, you know, counting myself out in that way. I had to really like keep my religious identity and my AA spirituality very separate. And then other moments in my sobriety, I have to really bring them close in together. And I find that as someone who is pretty deep within the study of the Jewish tradition, it's always like my AA brain is speaking to me when I engage with my religious practice. And my religious practice is always kind of speaking to me as I engage with AA. So, I mean, one example, if I can share really quickly, of a story from the Jewish tradition from the Talmud that just to me is completely AA, if it's okay to share for a second, is a story about a bunch of rabbis. This is in the Babylonian Talmud, where a rabbi gets sick and he falls ill. And then another rabbi comes to him and asks him the question, Joe, is your suffering dear to you? And the sick rabbi says, no, neither the suffering I'm going through or any kind of reward I could get from it. And so the healthy rabbi says, okay, then give me your hand. And so they take each other's hands. The healthy rabbi raises the sick rabbi back to health. And then that priorly sick rabbi that goes to another sick rabbi and says, you're sick. Is your suffering dear to you? And the sick rabbi says, no, neither my suffering nor its reward I could get for it. Okay, well, give me your hand. And they take hands and they raise each other back to health. To me, that's AA. And, you know, there's this question in that text that says, well, why couldn't that rabbi who was sick just raise themselves back up to health? And the answer is because a prisoner can't free themselves from their prison. You know, thinking for a second about alienation, thinking for a second about my experience, I had no idea how to save myself. I had no idea. I knew how to drink. I knew how to find the drink. I knew how to survive things that put me between me and the drink. I knew how to do that. I didn't know how to save myself. And I knew to some level, you know, when I was at the pit of my despair, it was that feeling of no one's going to save me. And it's so weird that I go into the room of Alcoholics Anonymous and someone else says to me, hi, I'm Michael. I'm Lee. I'm an alcoholic. I know how to help. How about I'm just going to go get a big book for you and I'm going to write my number in it. Keep coming back. It works. And then later through this process of the steps, I write out all of my inventory. And then my sponsor in step 5 has me list all of these things and then says to me, is your suffering that dear to you? Do you want to keep holding on to this? And I say to them, no, this is not these resentments, these fears. This isn't the way I want to live. And so I say, okay, well, let's turn it over. And then suddenly I experience that relief and I go find another person who I can then help do the same. So I share all of this as a way of saying that for me, at least, everything is sort of about everything. And that's because I'm sober. So my engagement with my religious tradition is solely contingent on me being sober. I would say that sobriety is the thing that kind of drives the whole. I don't know, if I weren't sober, then I wouldn't be a good Jew. In the end, I'll just say that these things at some points have to be in conversation with each other. Maybe other religious people feel the same. Sometimes they have to talk to each other. Sometimes they have to be separate. But ultimately, through sobriety, you know, in all things, more will be revealed. You know, the wisdom that we get, that at least that I get from the program, only deepens my religious identity and allows me to then bring my religious identity to my recovery.
Wow. Well, I love the experience that you're bringing to the program of recovery. And I love knowing that there are people like you that are helping. So it's a wonderful thing. If you were asked to give some words of advice or wisdom to folks that are listening that may be new to the program, what would you want to say to them?
I'd want to say, yeah, I don't know, if you're new and you're listening to this podcast and maybe you're deciding whether to go to your first meeting, maybe you've gone to some meetings already. I think the thing that's like deep in my heart is to say, good for us. Good for us that you are a part of this. Even by listening to this podcast, we need you. We need you in the sense that you have something in your sobriety, even if it's just a few days, a few hours. Seeing you get sober will help me know that I can do the same. So even if you're just listening to this podcast, good for us that you're listening. This is the start. You don't have to be, I don't know, the other thing I guess I should say is that, you know, one thing that's felt so true to me through this whole 6 years of sobriety is that I've never, ever had to be as alone as I felt when I was drinking. I just don't have to feel that way anymore. And I wish that for anyone who is getting new. And I want to help you feel that way. So if you're listening to this right now, please know that good for me that you're connecting with me at this level. And I wish you well on your journey.
Thank you so much, Zach, for agreeing to do this with us. It's been such a fabulous conversation. I wish we could keep it going.
Thank you, Zach.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. If you want to find us online, you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/Daily Reflection Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Reflector. You can read stories of recovery from our community at blog.dailyreflectionpodcast.com. Please don't forget to give us a rating on your podcast app. We greatly appreciate it. Have a great day.
This podcast produced by Lee McGinnis and Michael Lynn. Audio editing services by Jeff Bame.